Author's notes. There's official art of the main trio celebrating New Year's Day in Japan, so of course I needed to figure out how the heck they'd get there. I'd also been thinking a lot about the transition from Hasetsu to St. Petersburg and reverse culture shock and how weird that will wind up being for Victor, who, as far as we know, has never really left St. Petersburg before. Thus this fic was born. That description probably makes it sound a lot more rationalized and planned out than it actually was, since my actual writing process was just, like, thinking about Yuri's family and Victor, and attachment to place, and the strange emotional state of living abroad, and then crying until I had written, like, 5K. Title taken from the song of the same name by Kerrigan and Loudermilk, which is one of my favorite musical representations of reverse culture shock and the defamiliarization of familiar places. I somehow managed to write seasonally appropriate fic, yeah! Akemashite omedetou gozaimasu to anyone celebrating. No translation notes again. Try to keep it somewhat understandable in context. Not sure how well I managed this time. But miscellaneous notes. How do you say miss in Japanese? Fun fact, there isn't really an obvious way to directly translate miss, as in missing someone or something, into Japanese. On the other hand, Japanese has the word natsukashii, which doesn't necessarily have a single direct English translation. It's often translated as nostalgic, but can be used for a wider range of things. Japanese cheese. It varies wildly in quality, but a lot of the stuff you can get in grocery stores is pretty bad. Cheese inevitably ends up being one of the foods I miss most when I'm in Japan. What are we even eating? For some reason, whenever I ask people what we're eating in Japan, the answers are hilariously vague and unhelpful. Some of my favorites include some kind of shellfish, I don't know, organs from inside the body, and probably seaweed. And then, of course, my all-time favorite. I was eating at a sushi restaurant, asked what kind of fish the special of the day was, and the chef just yelled, "It's fish!" at me from behind the counter. Swear words. It is a truth universally acknowledged that if you get a bunch of multilingual people together in a room, inevitably there is going to be an impromptu how to swear in five languages lesson. Japanese bread, shukpan. The bread you'd most commonly buy in a Japanese grocery store is frequently compared to Wonder Bread. My roommate's Russian teacher used to complain about how light American bread was, so I can only imagine what she would think of Japanese bread. Leaving your heart behind. This is a reference to a quote by Miriam Adeney, but you'll find similar sentiments expressed in a lot of writing on coming home after living abroad and or reverse culture shock. The mysterious communication habits of multilingual people. So, surprise, it's really hard to convey multilingualism in a fic that's written in a single language. I spend a lot of time around other multilingual people, so I wanted to integrate some bits of the way we communicate with each other into the fic, the code switching, the different languages for different types of conversations, the feeling that words are untranslatable or that the same word has a different feeling in different languages, etc. Get four people who can speak five languages between them in a room, and it's a nightmare. Come versus come home. There are basically three major directional action verbs in Japanese. To go, iku, to come, kuru, and to return home, kaeru. And which one you use depends on the intended location's relation to both the speaker and the listener. Normally, Maddie would ask Victor to come back, kuru. Reader's notes. Once again, I really related to this story. Not just from the description of reverse culture shock, from moving to Japan and then moving back, to find that you've changed and you're a different person now and missing Japan, because I miss Japan so much some days, guys. I miss the trains and I miss the food and I miss my cute little red bicycle and being able to bike down to the post office and the grocery store. And I miss walking through the rice fields and the bamboo forest to get to work in the morning. And I miss the food. Did I mention that I miss the food? And I miss the history, just being able to turn a corner and there's a little temple that's been there for 600 years. We don't have anything like that in America. But I also related to this story because a couple of years ago, my mom sold the childhood home we grew up in. So there's a new lady in there now, and she's totally redone all of the gardening and the landscaping. And I'm sure the inside is totally different as well. And my childhood library has been entirely redecorated. It was just on the street from my house, so I used to walk there multiple times a week. And now it looks all different. So there is definitely that sense that even if I wanted to go home, and I'm still just an hour away, I could go home anytime, really. But it's all changed. What I think of as home is not there anymore. I really loved the line where it says, "Maybe Victor doesn't miss Hasets so much as he misses that ability to evolve, to change, to break cleanly with the past, and become someone new in a place where no one knew the old him." Because that was one thing that was amazing about Japan, is it was a totally fresh start, and it was an adventure. And, you know, I was young, I was single, I had no commitments, I could just pack a bag and take one bag and one carry-on and a computer and move to Japan and travel all over Asia. And now I do have all these commitments, and I'm married, and I've got a regular job, and I've got a mortgage to pay. So Japan for me represented this freedom and this phase of my life that I'll never get back. Okay, I do have to say a couple of words of defense of Japanese bread, though, because Japanese bread is amazing. You go down to these like little mom-and-pop bakeries. Why aren't mom-and-pop bakeries more of a thing in America? And they have all of these varieties of bread, and there's like bread with red bean paste, and there's like honeydew melon-flavored breads, and they're all so good. Japanese bakers also seem to be in this competition to see who can squeeze the most carbohydrates and starch sources into one food item at a time. So some of the favorites I miss are bread rolls filled with like mashed potato and corn salad. So it's like bread filled with potatoes and corn and mayonnaise, and it's amazing. Or yakisoba pan, which is bread filled with like fried soba noodles. Also so good, and like ginger and little bits of seaweed. And there is definitely a different attitude to food over there, though. I would ask the kids at school, like, what food are we getting served for lunch? And inevitably, the answer would be either rice or bread. What are we having for lunch? Rice. Well, if I heard rice, that meant we were having like Japanese or Asian food. And if they said bread, that meant we were having some kind of Western-inspired dish. So it might be, you know, like spaghetti. And then also on the side, if it was bread day, you would get like a little mini loaf of bread, like a 6-inch Subway sub kind of bread, along with your pasta. So there was always either a pretty large bowl of rice or a pretty large piece of bread, like a carbohydrate centering your meal, because Japan loves their carbohydrates. Which is why I don't feel guilty anymore about eating carbohydrates, because if they can live on that much rice and still be so skinny, I can too. Carbohydrates all the time. Speaking of which, Japanese bread does definitely use a lot more sugar than we're used to in the West. I'd read an article once about how when Subway, the sandwich chain, moved to Japan, it totally bombed the first time, and they had to retrench and then do a bunch of customer satisfaction surveys. And turns out what they were missing was the bread didn't have enough sugar in it. So they had to triple the amount of sugar they put into the bread. And now Subway is a thriving chain in Japan. But the mayonnaise is sweeter, the ketchup is sweeter. Okay, yeah, and let me scream about this. I'm so glad she brought it up in the fic, because it's lost on a lot of American viewers, but Yuri's family and Yuri start telling Victor that he should kairu, he should come home. Like in the episode where Makachin is sick and, you know, Victor's like, I have to go back to Japan to be with him. Yuri says, you should go home, kairu. So he specifically uses this word to refer to Hasets as home for Victor. And I had a lot of feelings, and there was a lot of like clawing at my face and crying. And so really, I hope that one lady who was posting all the translation notes on the series posts a translation note on that, because there is so much going on linguistically that you really miss if you aren't listening to the Japanese, and there's so many feelings. Anyway, this reader's note is now like a third of the length of the entire podfic, so I should probably go. But wow, thank you for sticking with me. And if you likewise have feelings about travel or culture shock or homesickness or language or linguistic nerdiness or Japanese, please contact me in the comments on AO3 or on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Bye.